Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast.
Welcome, fellow Lions fans who have enjoyed the best Lions season in my lifetime. We are 2 months into the offseason at this point, so it's a good time to discuss some combine news, free agency news, as well as draft issues. And I'll recap the 49ers game. I'm Jimmy Liao, University of Michigan Medical School grad, board certified in family medicine, and I'm going to talk about all the medical health injury news as it relates to our Detroit Lions. And I'll do all that next. Like Jim Harbaugh, after a few years at U of M, I moved on to the West Coast. He went to LA. I'm here in Washington State. That made it easy to make the trip to Santa Clara for the Niners game. So let me give you my impressions of that. The surrounding areas around the stadium are very nice. It's located in a commercial industrial type suburb. So you got big multi-lane roads, easy to walk and drive around. Everything looked very safe, very nice. Multiple hotels are within a couple miles of the stadium, and there are two within about a half a mile. I stayed in one of those, so it was only about a 10-minute walk. So if you're looking to go to the game, you can walk there from a hotel. Even if you drive, traffic does not seem like it would be a major issue. San Jose, which is only about 15 to 20 minutes away from the stadium, is the big city close to the stadium. Unbeknownst to me, it has an enormous Vietnamese community, maybe the biggest in the country. One of my followers at ham_MLY on Twitter is Vietnamese. He gave me a bunch of recommendations of places to visit and to eat, and I appreciated all that. The stadium itself is probably the least impressive of all the ones I've been to so far, at least aesthetically. It's a perfectly fine place to watch a game, but it doesn't look that great. The exterior looks like an unfinished director set. The concourses were all very basic. Contrast this with the LA stadium, which I felt was the most impressive one. Now, walking around before the gates opened, a DLP listener recognized me and said hi, and we talked for a while. His name was Roberto, and his wife was, I believe, Stephanie. If I got the names mixed up, I apologize. It was a long day. So please let me know or correct me on Twitter. They live in California, so they drove to the game, like probably many Lions fans. Afterwards, my 10-year-old son, who I had taken to the game, said to me, "Dad, you're famous." I was like, "Yep, me and Taylor Swift, famous NFL fans." So thank you to Roberto for making me look good in front of my kid. Unlike Taylor Swift, though, the NFL did not offer me a luxury suite, but I did have pretty good tickets for the game. Lions fans had an impressive turnout for this short-notice playoff game on the other side of the country. There was a lot of blue in the stadium. If I had to rank all the road games I'd gone to last year as far as fan turnout, I'd probably say number one would be the LA Chargers, although it's hard to tell for sure because the colors are the same there. Number two was the Packers. Really impressive Lions turnout there. I remember at the end of the game, we were up by 14, so Packers fans had mostly left. Lions fans moved all the way down into the lower bowl, the bottom next to the bench. The Packer fan sitting next to me said, "That's a whole lot of blue." So even Packer fans were impressed with how many Lions turned out. Number three would be the Kansas City Chiefs game. This was impressive because it was the first game of the year. We were really not sure how many fans were going to turn out for that game, but there were a ton behind the bench. I remember pregame, Brad Holmes was standing on the field talking to Sheila Hamm, pointing at the crowd with a look of amazement at how many fans there were. And then fourth would be this Niners game. Again, still very impressive given the circumstances. Now, as far as the Niner fans, all the ones I interacted with were very nice, very pleasant. So bottom line is it's an easy place to go for a game if you're interested in that. The Lions are playing at Santa Clara again this coming season. I fully expect that game to be a Sunday nighter. It's going to be one of the biggest games of the year. So that should be fun. And being a night game, I'd probably recommend one of the hotels within walking distance. So you don't have to be driving around in the dark and you can avoid any late night drunk driving issues.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, now let's talk about the game. Fortunately, no major injuries noted. You always worry about these late season games because any kind of major injury will knock them out of all of next season. The Niner game was only 8 months from the start of next season, so any major injury, ACL, Achilles, could have had major impact on the next year. Derek Barnes in the first quarter had an injury to his right knee at the 10-minute mark. I saw Jeff Risen during the game tweet that it looks similar to a Sam Laporta's knee injury, and he was right on about that. Did not appear to have any significant valgus or varus deformity, just a right knee hyperextension. Valgus is when the knees knock together. Varus is when the knees spread apart. So we're probably dealing with just a bone bruise. Should be fine. Entering the last year of his four-year rookie contract, expect no issues for next year. Kirby Joseph in the third quarter was swinging his left arm around like he might have had a possible stinger. He returned quickly and played the rest of the game, no issues. Jameson Williams, the final TD catch, landed awkwardly, possible mild left MCL sprain, no long-term concern there. He seems to land a bit awkwardly on some of his catches. We saw this in the Broncos game earlier in the year when both of his knees bent awkwardly, but he did not miss any time with that. James Houston made his triumphant return after a week two injury, a right severe high ankle sprain causing a fibula fracture. He rushed exclusively from the right defensive edge position as I had anticipated because rounding the corner from the right position puts an inversion strain on the right ankle as opposed to rushing from the left edge position, which would put an eversion or external rotation strain on the ankle, which was his mechanism of his injury. Now, him returning at about the four-month mark was anticipated, so it's not like he had a delayed return. This is about when we expected him to be back. He did not have that much of an impact during the game, but it was still great to see him return for one game. It gets him ready for the next year. His burst looked pretty good during the game, so hopefully he can get back to where he was during his rookie season. He was tendered as an ERFA, which is an exclusive rights free agent, so he'll definitely be back next year. Guys who came into the game with injuries, Alex Anzalone was playing with a rib fracture. He looked fine. Jonah Jackson had a left meniscus. I'll talk about him in a little bit. Frank Ragnow came into the game with a left knee MCL and a left high ankle. He looked fine. Josh Reynolds entered the game with a rib injury unspecified, but maybe that was a contributing factor to the two drops that he had. Hendon Hooker had a tooth injury come into the game. My main concern here is not with Hendon, as I'm sure he is a perfectly fine dentist. My concern is that the last thing we need is for Frank Ragnow to get any bright ideas about other body parts to put on the injury report. He already blazed a new path with his throat cartilage fracture from a couple years ago. A guy who's not going to be following Frank Ragnow's footsteps, hopefully, is Sam Laporta, who had a left knee hyperextension and bone bruise, but his burst looked good during the game. He was still wearing his bulky left knee brace, but with some time and rest over the offseason, he should be in great shape for 2024. Khalif Raymond has a suspicion for a right PCL sprain on video, did not play in the game against the Niners, but with some time and rest, that should be fully healed for 2024. We are a few days into free agency at this point, so let's talk about guys who are not returning. Jonah Jackson is the big one. 2023, multiple injuries, left high ankle sprain cost him 3 games. Wrist injury cost him 2 games. Left meniscus cost him the last 1.5 games of the season. He was pretty reliable the previous 3 years, though, playing 16, 16, and 13 games. He signed for 3 years, $51 million with the Rams. Did the Lions make an effort to sign him? Hard to say at that price. The injuries certainly could have been a factor, as the Lions know more about his injuries than any other team. But the cost could have been a more important factor. It's hard to imagine him paying significantly more than, say, what Ragnow is making per year at 13.5, Taylor Decker at 12. Sewell's only on his rookie deal, so he doesn't really count. He'll make a lot more soon. You do worry about possible chemistry issues when the fourth most important guy on the line is making the most money. Which of these injuries potentially could be long-term issues for him? The main ones for me are the left meniscus tear, which could be a factor a few years down the line, as meniscus issues can lead to early arthritic issues. The wrist injury is also unknown. Could it just be a sprain that will recover fully, or could it be a chronic arthritic issue? We don't know, but the medical staff probably has a pretty good idea about all this. Another guy who was not brought back was Jerry Jacobs. He had an ACL in 2021. In 2023, he missed 1 game with an unseen, undisclosed left knee injury. Also missed 1.5 games with a hamstring. He started the year strong as a good starter, but then ended up getting benched the second half of the year. Did these injuries play a role in him losing playing time and falling out of favor? Hard to say, but certainly could have been a factor. CJ GJ, we lost to the Eagles on a 3-year deal for quite a bit of money. I think he owes the Lions and our success a great deal of credit for that 3-year deal, as he was able to play the last 4 games of the year, 3 of them which were in the playoffs. So if the Lions weren't even in playoff contention, CJ GJ may not have even returned from his pec injury that he suffered in week 2. Now let's talk about guys that we did re-sign. Graham Glasgow's the big one. He signed for a 3-year deal for $20 million. He's currently 31 years old. He fortunately was able to stay healthy in the entire 2023 year. He does have a significant injury history, though, that Jeff Risden requested I look into. In 2021, had a severe left ankle fracture and missed the final 8 games. I could not find video of the injury online. I could also not find any real good details reports, but I did find in the 9 News Denver website that it was reported to be a Masonneau fracture of the tibia. Well, the Masonneau fracture is actually of a fibula, so that hurts the credibility of that report a little bit, but I think a Masonneau fracture is very likely what happened. The fibula is the smaller of the 2 bones in the lower leg, with the other being the tibia, proximal being closer to the center of the body. Thus, it's a fracture higher up on the fibula that's closer to the knee. The mechanism of a Masonneau fracture is an external rotation of the ankle, which is the same mechanism of a high ankle sprain. So what we have is a severe high ankle sprain that's forceful enough to fracture the fibula. Where have we heard this before? It's the same mechanism that caused the James Houston injury. So it's possible that James Houston had the same kind of fracture as Graham Glasgow, a Masonneau. Don't have official reports on James Houston's injury, though. It's much easier to return from this kind of sprain and fracture for an offensive lineman compared to an edge rusher, though, if you're trying to compare recovery rates. Another guy we re-signed is Zadovan Knight. He injured his left shoulder in week 5 on a pretty brutal direct trauma to his shoulder and was out for the year. So a good sign for his health that he is back. We traded for Carlton Davis, cornerback, 27 years old. Hurt much of last year, though, with toe, hip, groin, and concussion. played 12 games in 2023. Previous years, he had played 13, 10, 14, 14, and 13. So he has had a history of missing multiple games every year due to injuries. So we'll see how that trends going forward. We also signed Amik Robertson for 2 years, $9.25 million. He's a cornerback as well. Speaking of cornerbacks, re-signed Emmanuel Mosley to a one-year deal. His injury history is significant. Tore his left ACL October 9th, 2022. Tore his right ACL October 8th, 2023, after returning for just a couple plays in week five. Now, what is his timeline to return for 2024? Hard to say for sure, but multiple replies on my Twitter timeline correctly noted that his return for 2023 may have been delayed by a hamstring strain as well as a cleanup procedure on his knee. Hopefully that suggests that he could be ready earlier than in 2023, but I still think we can't totally count on him till midway through 2024. The cleanup issue that he had in 2023 does suggest possible meniscus cartilage tear issues, which does have some long-term concerns. Now, him missing a few games at the beginning of the year, possibly starting on PUP, I don't think is a big deal. Since we are a contender this year, we're favored to go to the championship game again, which would make it about a 20-game season like last year. So if he misses, say, the first six games of the year, he would still have a 14-game season, which is tremendous. We also know quarterbacks get injured all the time, so having a healthy guy coming in partially through the season, I think, is perfectly fine from a strategy standpoint. All right, let's get to some NFL draft injury news, which is typically our favorite time of the year, although nowadays it's actually the playoffs. So what's going on with the draft? The biggest, most interesting guy is Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback, definitely a position of need for the Lions. He was found to have a Jones fracture at the combine. What is a Jones fracture? It's a fracture of the fifth metatarsal of the foot. If you're watching this on YouTube, I have a little foot model that I'm showing it to you on. The fifth metatarsal of the foot is on the outside of your foot, about midway up your foot. So a fracture in that area is called a Jones fracture. There are other fractures in that area, such as an avulsion fracture, which is slightly different, but in the same area. He likely had a stress fracture as he reportedly played on it during the season. Thus, it wasn't an acute fracture. He was planning on working out at the combine and still plans to work out his pro day, which also suggests a stress fracture. Did he know about this before the combine? My guess is absolutely yes. It's hard to imagine Alabama with their basically professional medical team and famous surgeons not knowing about a Jones fracture. It can be hard to see a Jones fracture on x-ray, though, especially a stress fracture, as they are not often seen on x-ray, but they can show up on MRI, so I'm sure he got an MRI when they were having concerns about that area of the foot. It was reported that he is going to get surgery for it, which is a screw fixation surgery, after the draft. Now, there are some major red flags here if you're a Lions fan considering drafting this guy. Why did he not get the surgery done right after the season in January? We saw the game against Michigan. He could have gotten it done right at that point. Recovery after a Jones fracture surgery is usually around 6 to 12 weeks, so he possibly could have been back in time to do some testing before the draft. Was he hoping the Jones fracture would not be discovered at the combine and the plan to deal with it after the draft? This is definitely something I would look into if I'm a Lion GM, asking him these tough questions. Why did you not have this fracture dealt with earlier? Now, the reason the Jones fracture is problematic is because the poor blood supply, which results in unreliable healing in that area. Perfusion of blood is the key to healing. Areas of the body with high blood supply, like your hands or your face, heal very fast. You may notice this healing speed difference on your own body and different body parts when you cut yourself. So what's the risk of the Jones fracture going forward? Number one is refracture rate, which is around 7 to 12%. That means you're breaking the bone again. Number two is non-union. Given the poor blood supply, sometimes that fracture does not heal, which is called a non-union. There's about a 3 to 4% chance of this happening after surgery, although there are some reports that say it's up to 8%. Without surgery, it's 25% approximately. So it's a frequent thing that this Jones fracture just does not heal well. We won't know about the non-union status until after the draft, which is a major issue. The third reason is once he gets his screw implanted into that bone to fix it, could that decrease his athletic ability? Definitely a possibility there. The screw can cause discomfort. Also, the screw can slightly alter the biomechanics of that bone. The bone has a natural curvature in that fifth metatarsal. It's very subtle, and for everybody, it's going to be slightly different. The insertion of a straight screw could slightly affect that curvature. So that surgery absolutely could affect his athletic ability going forward. Reportedly, he's getting the surgery after his testing at his pro day. So how can we trust his numbers at his pro day? First of all, pro days, it's hard to trust the numbers anyway compared to the combine. But let's say he runs, say, a 4.4 at his pro day. What's he going to be running after the surgery? Is it going to be a 4.5? Or maybe he runs a 4.5 at the pro day. Maybe after the surgery, he's at a 4.6. These are small differences, but they're major differences, especially at the cornerback position. We've seen this in the past with Lions cornerbacks. Darius Slay, a 4.4 guy. Jeff Okuda, a 4.5 guy. Tease Tabor, a 4.6 guy. We saw the athletic difference on the field, and it was pretty obvious. So losing a step, even a half step at cornerback, could be a huge difference. And is that worth drafting a guy early with this big unknown? So if you draft this guy, you're taking on that few percent risk of a non-union, which would require another procedure. Possibly, maybe you lose him for most or even the entire rookie season, and you're risking getting a player that's just not athletically the same as he looked on tape in college. So lots of risk here. So if you see the Lions passing on him in the first round, second round, don't be overly concerned because they know about his medical issues more than we do. Speaking of Jones fractures, Johnny Newton, defensive tackle out of Illinois, had surgery for a Jones fracture in January. He played the second half of 2023 season with that injury, so likely a stress fracture similar to Kool-Aid. Another cornerback with the current injury is Cooper DeJean, Iowa cornerback. Fibula fracture, hurt his leg in practice, did not work out at the combine. If it's an isolated fibula fracture, not a big deal. If it's a James Houston issue where it's a severe high ankle sprain with the fibula fracture, then it's a much bigger deal. Nate Wiggins, a cornerback, had a hip flexor strain at the combine. Those of you who remember Kenny Golladay from a few years ago, he had what I suspect is a hip flexor strain that year, missed about half the year for it. So these things can linger. Typically, hip flexor strains shouldn't be a major issue going forward, though. Ennis Rakestraw, cornerback, hurt his groin at the combine. He also had an ACL tear in 2021, missed four games last year with a groin ab issue in December 2023 at core muscle surgery. So with multiple cornerbacks in the draft currently dealing with issues and injuries, you do wonder if there was a slight impetus there to sign the guys we signed and trade for the guys we traded for the offseason, which were Amik Robertson, Carlton Davis, and Emmanuel Mosley. Now, Jeff Risden has a good article with a lot of details about Ennis Rakestraw, who I mentioned, along with Peyton Willis, Michael Penix, Amarius Mims. All these guys have a significant injury history, so look at that article for details about that. Now, there is a question from Jeff Merrill on Twitter. He was wondering about my take on a lot of these injury issues. Well, some injuries are now long-term issues and some are. For example, an ACL is not a long-term issue, but any associated meniscus tear with that ACL injury is a concern because at some point down the line, That missing meniscus can lead to increased damage of the articular cartilage, which causes arthritic type issue. Amarius Mims, the offensive lineman in Risden's article, who had a high ankle sprain with tightrope surgery. I'm not worried about high ankle sprains with offensive linemen. I don't think that's a long-term concern. The main overriding question for all these GMs is whether a history of many injuries means an increased risk of injury in the future. That is the main thing they're trying to figure out. And I think that is something to be concerned about if a guy has a history of many injuries. It's possible that the player's body simply can't handle the rigors of football. It's possible that their playing style increases their risk of injury. Maybe they can't avoid injury as well. Maybe they can't see dangerous situations on the field as well as other players. It's also possible that some players are able to play through an injury more effectively than others. So it's certainly a case-by-case basis here and a big gray area and a big topic of debate, but it's something definitely needs to be looked at on a case-by-case basis for all these guys. All right, that's it for today. As always, feel free to leave any opinions or perspectives on any of these medical issues on Twitter at Jimmy Liao MD. Last name is L-I-A-O. Thanks for listening.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go. Let's
go. Come on, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Yes!
You've had enough of that shit.